You are listening to the What a Word podcast, an interview style podcast where guests bring their unique experiences and insight on culture, life's challenges, and faith. Each episode is seasoned with words which will inspire and encourage. Now here is your host, Ryan Sharp.
Thanks as always for joining me for the What a Word podcast. As you know, this is designed to inspire and uplift. And each week, it's an interview style podcast. And each week we have guests from a variety of fields. Their histories are different. Their roles are different. But our conversations are designed to inspire. And I'm hoping that you'll continue to join the movement. And if you have the opportunity, please, whatever is comfortable for you, if you're an auditory person, you like listening, there's a podcast app. If you like the visual, we have a YouTube channel. What a Word podcast is now on YouTube. And I want to thank those of you who share in the comments about ways the conversation or the person's story has lifted your spirits. It's why we do it. And with all that's happening in the world, we all need a little light. So I'm honored that you will join us again for another conversation. My guest today inspires me, and I'm so honored to have her as a guest today. Her name is Juliet Nelson. She's an educator, an entrepreneur, a co-founder of a learning management system that we'll get into. She's also a published author. And before recording, I wanted to know who was responsible for leading her in all of these directions. So I'm honored that she would join us today. There's more I could say about her background, but I'll leave it for our conversation. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Juliet Nelson, to the What a Word podcast.
Hi, Ryan.
And welcome.
Thank you.
I'm honored. I'm indeed honored. And I know we have a lot to unpack in a short time. I know you're busy, and I know this is probably the end of the day for you. So I promise to not belabor this, but I wanted to ask you, in this season, what are you grateful for?
I am grateful for a couple of things. I'm grateful for life. I am grateful for the beauty of community and that a village gives. I am grateful for healthy friendships and relationships. I'm grateful for love in all types of forms. Those are the things I'm grateful for. I am blessed to have an amazing village. I am blessed to have gone on a journey of healing where I've been able to really either heal, reconcile, repair, and really build healthy relationships with those around me, whether it's my friends, whether it's family members, and so on and so forth. And also work on being kinder to myself, right? I always tell people that before anything, you have to fill your cup first with love, compassion, grace. Those are the things I'm honored and grateful to have, I guess, in this moment. Yeah.
And before recording, I was going over Juliet's bio with her, and I told her I saw purpose, I saw focus, and all while happening, pursuing a number of different directions.
Yes.
This may be a layered question, but I wanted to know, where did your inspiration come from?
I think to start, perhaps it came from my parents. My father is he's an educator. He's also a preacher. So I grew up as a preacher's kid, not a pastor's kid, but a preacher's kid, traveling all over the place with my father, crusades and revivals and so on and so forth. My mother is also a registered dietitian. So I really grew up seeing my parents serve, seeing my parents, show love, show care to other people. And I think that, that was the first example of service for me. And so I guess a part of it is just, it's really instilled in me to see other people thrive and see other people do well. I don't get it right every time, but you know, the best I can do is try. So I think those are really my first examples of service, of living in purpose. You know, my parents have tapped into quite a bit. I'm an only child. So imagine, some people say, you know, it's a lot of pressure because I'm the one kid. You know, sometimes one kid doesn't do well, so you can depend on the other one. And I really hope parents are not doing that. But all to say, I am the only child. So it you know, there is the pressure that comes with them wanting to involve you in a lot, right? Making sure that you're involved in music and art and sports. That was the one thing that kind of flew over my head. I didn't catch on to that. But my parents really tried to involve me in so many different activities, so many different initiatives. And they were very supportive always along the way. And I think as I grew my own wings, sometimes I had crazy ideas. For example, packing my bags and flying halfway across the world to go teach in South Korea. They didn't know what I was doing, but you know, they were very supportive of it. And so I think, yeah, I would say they really plant the seeds for who I am and all that I am. And of course, a strong village that I had and that I have today. So, yeah.
Listeners should know that she is Dr. Juliet Nelson. She has a PhD.
Yes. Yes.
So I want to follow through with that. Courage. Courage seems to be the first cousin with all the things you've attempted and accomplished at this point. Where did the courage, where did the courage come from?
I don't know. Maybe it's my personal, I mean, I don't see it as a courage thing. Some people will say that I'm stubborn. I think I like to make decisions because I chose to make them, not just because someone told me to do it. And it's not to sound in a disobedient way, but for me, I like to be able to take accountability for the things I do. And so I think when it comes to some of my bold and crazy ideas, I will say I did have a friend of mine when I wanted to move to South Korea. A lot of people in the community are like, what is Elder Nelson and Sister Nelson thinking, sending their one child? And you know, I'm West Indian, my parents are Haitian. So usually the daughter grows up in the home and we don't leave until we're ready to get married. And so me having just graduated from college, not leaving for school, but actually moving halfway across the world to teach, there's a lot of naysayers, right? Why is this one kid from this little village of Spring Valley, New York, moving halfway across the world to the land of nowhere, right? As from our perception. And someone said, when you have children, what are you going to tell them about the life you've lived? What are you going to share? Are you going to tell them that you wanted to, it was your dream to go to South Korea, or it was an idea and you didn't do it? Or will you have stories to share of you living in another culture, interacting with different people, and really having this experience that not many people get to have in their lifetime? And that was the thing that said, you know what? If I can convince myself enough, I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to do it. And I think that inspires, that really sets the tone for everything that I do. I also now have in my head that I can be brave enough to walk away or brave enough to see it through. There's not a right answer for any of it. And that allows me to celebrate every season that I'm in. And so it's like, listen, I made the decision to start a business. I made the decision to fly out to South Korea. I made the decision to pack my bags in 2 weeks and move to a completely different state where I didn't really know anyone. I didn't have living arrangements or anything. And I was starting a brand new job. I made that decision, even though people may have discouraged it, but I made it and I'll take responsibility for it. There might be some things that go wrong. I might fall on my face and I'll learn from it. And as hard as it is, I'm gonna get right back up and I'm gonna keep pushing. Because it's part of the journey. It's part of enjoying the journey. It's part of trusting the process. And so, yeah, I don't know if that's called courage, but yeah, that's kind of where it comes from.
Powerful, powerful. And it sounds like your life was made richer by serving overseas.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the best years of my life. I think I was 21 at the time, but it was truly an enriching experience. You know, I know they have a lot of conversations about like the immigrant experience, right? And all of the myths and just the perceptions of immigrants and people who just don't live, who are not from this land called the United States that we say is so great. But I think one of the greatest honors of my life is to be the child of people who were not born in this country, to be the child of people to have roots from a country that's rich in culture, in history, in art, and all of that. And so the experience of being able to now go to just a completely different country, that's a culture very separate from my own, and not only learn about what makes them so unique, but also appreciate them for how I relate to them, right? Something as simple as, you know, rice. In Haitian culture, I know Haitian kids, rice is a, it is something that is included in every meal that's a meal. You don't even have an ice cream party for a kid's first birthday party without rice. You need the rice. That's just part of the culture. Every meal comes with rice. If it's a pizza party, where's the rice, right? So for me, I went to South Korea. Like, there's no one who eats rice more than West Indians first, Haitians second. And I remember that every term we used to have tea time, where the students used to get one day, they would be able to bring in snacks and they would be able to have conversations with their teacher, ask us questions about where we're from, about what we like, what it's like to live in the United States, an English speaking country, because I was an English teacher. And I remember one student who said, "Teacher Juliet, I'm gonna bring bread for you because you don't like rice." I said, "Who told you that? Who told you that?" He said, "No, you're American, you don't like rice." And I'm completely baffled because I didn't know where that came from. And I grew up in my little Haitian bubble. So in my little Haitian bubble in the United States, we like rice. So I didn't understand where the perception of bread over rice came from. This doesn't mean I don't like bread, but I love rice too. And so they ended up sharing, you know, what they understood. And it seems according to European culture, they have more bread. And so that's what brought up the perception that me, the American, likes bread. And prior to that, they only saw Haiti as that country where the earthquake happened. It was just a dot on the map that they had no clue about. And just this conversation about rice opened the door for so much more connections on what really kept, what the similarities that we had between the two cultures. Things like honorifics, right? In Haitian culture, you don't walk into a room without greeting every adult in the room. With Koreans, there's a level of respect that they have for adults and authority. And so we were able to really bond on the things that not only made our cultures unique, but the things that made our cultures similar. And so being able to travel halfway across the country, halfway across the world, and experience a different culture, but appreciate them, and also experience community, experience a village, experience love and grace and compassion from people who don't look like me, that was just a very pure experience, and honestly one of the best that I've ever had throughout my lifetime. So
that is so powerful, because you're talking about, as you indicated, two cultures that are different,
right?
And people who are, well, perception wise there's this invisibility, because the larger right. culture is what they're referring to now when they say you don't like rice, you have to like bread, because
right.
Powerful. And so I want to lead to this note now. You're the co-founder of the WASN. I hope I pronounced it.
Yes. Yes.
A learning management system. Talk to us about what inspired the creation and the founding of WASN.
Right. So myself, my business partner, he's more of your tech person and I'm more of your learning person. And so at the time that WASN, the idea for WASN came up, I think we both had some kind of an idea of creating some learning, some kind of a learning experience. And I think what brought us together was Haitian Creole. At the time, even though I was not born in Haiti, I do speak Haitian Creole fluently, and perhaps not as fluent as your native speakers, but there's a great level of understanding that I've come to appreciate especially about the language, coming from having taught English in another country, right? And so when you teach a language, you start to appreciate the different dynamics of what constitutes a language. And so in conversation, I think we both agreed that there were very limited resources for Haitian speakers and Haitian learners as it relates to Haitian Creole. So if you were born and raised in Haiti more and you wanted to learn English, or you wanted to read a book, I don't know, on politics or whatever, more than likely you would have had to learn French or Spanish or something so that you can now be able to get the knowledge that you want. And even though Haitian Creole is a well-recognized, it's established as an official language in Haiti, culturally and socially, French is accepted a little bit more. So you go to church, you go to a funeral, you go to a wedding, you know, usually even prayers, they do it in French because it sounds more eloquent, or it gives off the thought that it's people are more educated or whatever the case may be. And so in having those conversations, we said, you know what, there's a social need for us to really build this more appreciation for the language. And I mean, there are so many challenges as it relates to Haitian Creole because the dynamics of them of the language are constantly changed from time to time. You know, some people write it one way, other people write it a different way, and so on and so forth. And when we looked at the resources that existed, we found that there were gaps where there's not really a comprehensive approach to teaching Haitian Creole the way you learn English, the way you learn Spanish, French, Chinese, etc. And so that kind of birthed the idea of, okay, why not we come up with a curriculum that's comprehensive, that's aligned with the IRL standards. I believe it's the interagency language standards, that basically on a global scale, these are the competencies you need to meet as it relates to any language when you're at a certain level of fluency. And so that's what we're building. We do have a presence on social media, very small presence, but we were able to kind of introduce pronunciation and alphabet and so on and so forth. And it brought a lot of participation by Haitian Americans, the Haitian diaspora across the world, as well as those in Haiti. And so we are working on completing a curriculum and launching a full comprehensive learning management system where we can really provide value to people who are learning Creole as well as people who already speak Creole.
What did you find in terms of what inspired this? Were you finding that the young ones coming up who Creole was maybe their first language, right, they were invisible in the larger school context? Is that?
I know from my lens, even growing up in this country, in the United States, it is hard to learn Haitian Creole if you are not immersed in it at home. And for some kids, you know, if you're raised by a grandparent or something, you might get put into ESL in school because they might assume that, hey, you don't speak English because you predominantly speak Creole. Or the opposite can happen where you speak so much English in school, even though your parents might speak to you in Creole, you might understand it, but you're limited in how you can communicate it, right? And so even looking for resources for me, if it weren't for my household and hanging out with the ESL kids in school, I probably would have also been limited in Haitian Creole. So I think that was also part of that inspiration, having that experience of knowing that there are very limited resources, even for someone who wants to learn the language, right? A heritage speaker being part of the diaspora. And it's also part of, in a sense, preserving the culture, right? Not everybody's going to be born in Haiti, but just because you're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, however many generations down the line, that doesn't mean you cannot have an appreciation for the culture and the language. And so for me, that was the personal tie that I had to it. I know for my business partner, he was coming from the lens of the limitation in resources for Haitian Creole speakers in Haiti, where you're constantly having to learn a different language for you to be able to access the information that you need. So, yeah.
Wow. And so listeners should know, my guest, as I mentioned, is also an entrepreneur, and I'm wearing a pair of spectacles that I bought. She's wearing a pair that she created. Could you amplify for us, Nuri Lens?
To be fair, I brought them too, right? I had to buy them for myself. But yes, Nuri Lens is a handcrafted wooden eyewear company. It really, that started also in South Korea. A lot of my purpose, it was planted in South Korea, or the discovery of it, I will say, But it was really my love for eyeglasses. When I lived in South Korea, I found that I could purchase a pair of glasses for $30, including the eye exam, which is unheard of in the United States. That doesn't happen. That's not a thing. So, you know, with that, also I learned, I just observed that people wore all types of glasses, shapes, sizes, colors, and it wasn't a thing, right? Coming from a small town, very conservative space where, you know, there was almost like a standard and a principle as to how you were supposed to look or what shapes you were supposed to, you know what I mean? It people just kind of did what they did. And I lived close to the capital, Seoul. So that's where you have more of people being able to express themselves however they please. And so I think that's what also helped with like a boost of, you know what? I'm just going to step out as whoever I want to step out as. And so I was able to buy frames in different colors and different shapes and so on and so forth. When I came back to the States, I found that I was still trying to see if I can connect with whatever sources in Asia so I can get my frames there and then have them fill the prescription here because it's really expensive. And so some years after that, when I founded Junuri, my first company, I prayed a prayer, and honestly, I was joking, but I prayed a prayer and I said that the next pair of glasses that I purchased would be a pair that I designed. I didn't know what I was saying. I was honestly joking. The idea of an eyewear collection wasn't really a thing. Ironically, my first logo was a pair of glasses as well. It was a pair of blinged out cat eye glasses for a tutoring company, a learning and development company. So people would come up and they would see this gold and blue and silver logo. And they're like, oh, you sell eyewear? And I'm like, no, I offer tutoring and resume building services. And I eventually changed the logo to what people see today. But one day I happened to be purchasing a pair of eyeglasses for someone who was a gamer as a gift. And I learned that people who are gamers, they spend, of course, hours upon hours in front of their computer screens playing video games. And they have blue light blocking glasses to protect their eyes from the blue light that's emitted, as well as the screen time from sitting in front of the computer all day. And so I was like, wait, I serve students and professionals. At the time I was doing my PhD, I was also working for the government. I also had Junuri. So there were so many things that I was working on that required for me to be in front of a screen, whether it was my phone, whether it was the computer. And I said, this would be a great value add to students and professionals. And I think that's what really also helped propel it and move it forward. And the rest is history. Here we are.
So Dr. Nelson, I think you've covered most of the senses. I mean, here we've spoken about the language. We've yes. spoken about, you know, the eyes, the visual with the glasses. Right.
Yes.
But you've also been published. You're an author. Yes. Talk to us about what led you to the printed word. Why capturing, you know, and this is not just a printed word. You're speaking to the book, as far as I know, is speaking to those who are in college or are considering college. Yeah. You're tackling missteps, setbacks. You're tackling options. You are, in essence, right. providing a roadmap to those considering that journey. Why did you right. think it was important to write this down so people could have it?
So to be honest, it's not that I thought it was important to write it down. and that's not even where it started. Someone had offered to a small publisher had offered to work with me in publishing a memoir about my life. Now, when you publish a memoir about your life, it's a lot of layers, right? And that goes across the board, right? For everyone. And so I had a conversation with the person. I said, I'm gonna think about it. As well as when I had the funds, I would, you know, we can discuss it further. And I remember one day, I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to call this person and follow up sometime after. And I heard a voice that was like, stop. And I'm like, oh. And the voice said, you don't even know your testimony. I'm like, okay. And then the voice continued and said, that's not the person who's going to share your story. So now I'm like, I got to go back and pick my face up off the floor and tell this person or not call them back, whatever it is, that we're not going to be moving forward. So I really had to sit in a moment of pause. And I can't make this up. probably the next month, that's where the testimony began to unravel, right? Because again, I was in school. So I'm going through my doctorate experience and I'm a psychology student. And so now I'm understanding the behavioral nuances behind just the academic experience. And so later on that year, 2019, I happened to be speaking, you know, I'm really thinking about, okay, what am I supposed to say? Apparently they're not going to tell the story. So who's going to tell the story? Is it me? Is it somebody else? And so I happened to be speaking with one of my mentees who had graduated college, had already graduated college. And we're just chatting it up about the things we wish we knew going into college. Why did somebody tell me this? And why did somebody tell me that? You really telling me that you could have told me this in high school? I had to learn this in college. And we're just chatting it up, laughing about it. And that's when the light bulb went off in my head. Like, wow, that's what I can write about. And so sharing my lens of the college experience is really just almost, I don't want to say a tribute to my younger self, but it's a resource for my younger self of the things I wish I knew going into college. And some of the nuggets that now, you know, having been in my psychology program, being able to look at it from a completely different lens, right? And being able to break it down in a way that, you know, now it's like when you're going into college, you're now able to have a little bit more control over your and ownership over your academic experience. And so, yeah, that's really how my first published work happened. That was also the launch of the soft launch of my publishing company. So I actually wrote the book in 3 weeks. I do not recommend. I wrote it. I edited it. I spent days and weeks pulling all-nighters, going on like 1 to 2 hours of sleep. Horrible idea. But, you know, I really had to push it through my own system. I had to be my own customer. So I understood all of the pieces that went into publishing a book. And here we are.
That is awesome, man. I think about that same theme, man, the things I wished I knew before entering, and a timeless book, I would say. And I'm going to ask you at the end to just plug the name and let listeners know where they can find everything that you have to offer as well.
Sure.
I brought up to you a quote I believe you may have shared by Cool Urban Hippie, at Cool Her Urban Hippie on Twitter. And if you didn't share it, I'm giving you credit for sharing it.
I shared it on my Instagram.
Yeah, man. I thought, yeah, this was powerful, man. And I believe Juliet was the one who shared.
Yes, it was me.
He talks about all the harmful things happening in our world and the need to preserve our energy. Could you amplify that for us?
I don't remember it verbatim, but I remember what I shared. And it really was like, there's a lot of things going on. And don't feel ashamed to preserve your energy. You still have to create. You still have people to inspire. We still got stuff to do, right? So be okay with doing what you have to do to protect your peace. There's just so much going on. And you have the people who are using their voices and making their voices heard. And I'm so proud of those people. To a degree, I'm one of those people, right? When I'm passionate about something, I'm gonna say how I feel. But I was getting to a place where it was just the consumption of so much stimuli in the environment was overwhelming. And I think what did it was when Will slapped Chris, where everyone became a CNN commentator. And I think what was scary for me was how much grace was removed from Will Smith, right? Not condoning anything he did, but us being human beings, how much grace was removed from Will Smith? And you are seeing people that you know in real life who they have all these comments against a human being that felt like they were under attack and responded. And everyone is saying, this is what I would have done in this situation. You never know what is going to be done when you are on international TV, right? And whether it was his pride or him protecting his wife, whatever it was. But I think that was very triggering for me Because for me, I'm like, little me, if I ever was in a situation where I did what I felt like I was doing to defend myself or my family, would someone, those same people who I know personally, remove grace from me the same way? And it so happened that for myself, what I do is 1 month every quarter of the year, the first month, I go on a fast. And usually I fast from meat. That particular month, I think it was April. And I said, I need to fast from social media. I need to unplug. And it was amazing. I said, I'm gonna take off Instagram and Twitter and everything, because it was just a lot. And then I said, you know what? I need to unplug from LinkedIn too. And I found that it was extremely helpful. It was very helpful in me recharging. I was able to find other ways to replenish myself. Of course, I get the headlines from the news, but for me, they were just headlines. And I was okay with unplugging. And it cleared up so much real estate for me to pursue activism in my own way. I still had to teach students, and I still needed to preserve my energy to pour into these students so they have the knowledge, the skills, the abilities, so they can do great things and they can represent their communities when they get older and so on and so forth. And you know, it also allowed me the real estate to create, to work on my business, to do the things that I need to do so that I can serve other people. And when I came back, I was like, wow, this was a really bad idea to social media, because again, it's still the same stimuli, nothing changes. And so as I saw just one thing after another, then you have Russia. Well, Russia and Ukraine was a thing already, but you have all of these events and it's just one thing after the next. And people are literally jumping from one thing to the next and jumping from one thing to the next. And if, for example, the slap came back between Will and Chris, they're going to go back to it and then they're going to go back to the new thing. So, and then when Ukraine comes back and it's an issue, they go back to Ukraine and then they come back and then there's gas prices and then there's just so much stimuli in the environment. And for me, I had to make a decision and say, you know what? People are going to post and people are going to share and people are going to argue. I don't have to feel obligated to do the same. Even if at a point I was doing it too, but right now I just need to process. I need to process and I'm okay with that. And so I think that's where it was coming from. Where, you know, of course, when the Supreme Court made their decision or decisions, because it's been several things that have been coming out from their end. For me, I'm seeing it and I'm choosing not to internalize it. And it's not to remove grace from other people. You know, I've had conversations in different groups. And I think for me, it's allowed me to also have an open mind in understanding other people's perspectives, whether I agree with them or not, you know. And I know that is a challenge as human beings, where you have someone who may not be on the side that really protects your dignity, your right to choose, your whatever it is, who you are as according to your race, your gender, your ethnicity, whatever, your identity. So for me, it did provide an opportunity where it's like, listen, all I'm getting is the headlines and I'm choosing not to go through and read everybody's commentary and so on and so forth. So it creates space for me to hear the perspectives of people and actually hear their lived experiences and why they come from the perspective they do. Again, whether I agree or not. And so with that being said, I still have the mental capacity to create. I still have the mental capacity to work, to rest, to you know, indulge in my hobbies if that's what I choose to do. And it's not that I'm ignoring the issues, but really I'm trying to be kind to myself in a world that is not really being kind to me. And so that was really, you know, when I saw that post, I think it really summarized what the journey that I was on for months and the journey that some people might just start to go on at this moment in time. So, yeah.
People need us in these streets, man, to inspire. Mm-hmm. And we have policies to fix, systems to tear down, mm-hmm. people to lift up.
And everyone's activism is not the same. Some people are going to be at the protest, and that is okay. For some, the activism is pouring into your children, educating your children, ensuring that they have an understanding of the laws and the policies, or they have an understanding of self
For some people, it might be writing a book. It might even, for you, it might, the activism might be, you know, inspiring people through your podcast. Everyone's activism is different. And I don't think people should feel pressured to be activists in a certain way, because we're all needed, right? The cause needs all of us. If one of us are not included, it's not successful. So.
Juliet, I have about two more questions for you. You have to be careful. Sure. When I say two, it usually ends up to be five or six. But it keeps me accountable. Wanted to ask you though, do you have any stories that you're on the cusp of as a person in charge of a publishing company? Is there something bubbling on the surface that you want to share here first, which, before you share it anywhere else?
I don't want to say it because then that means I have pressure. I will say that now that I have graduated with my PhD, I may have another experience to share.
Awesome.
I may.
Right.
I'm going to say may.
Right.
Because I might have the energy in my brain to entertain it today. And then tomorrow I might be like, you know what? I'm going to give it more time. But that is in the works to really share my perspective as a PhD student, learning online and doing it through a pandemic. So, yeah.
And let me follow up with this. I threw a publishing company, but many people who are not trying to write don't understand the role of publishers. Could you amplify that for me as well?
So,
and why you created your own?
Right. So for me, it didn't even start as publishing, technically. It started as book coaching. And what I do is I really work with the writer to bring their lens and their vision and their story to life, right? And that's part of the purpose in them, right? Empowering them to achieve that part of their purpose and somehow telling their story. So what I do is I coach them, and it's a journey. You know, some people just provide the editing service. For me, what I found is there is an experience in writing a book and putting your story down on paper. I think that's one thing, if I did have a regret in writing my book, that's what it would have been. Really taking my time to just enjoy the journey of writing. It can be frustrating. It can be exhausting sometimes. And of course, when you feel like you've made it to the end or closer to the end, you just want to get it published. But there is beauty in really reflecting on the story, the experience, or the creativity, whatever it is, reflecting on that as you bring it to life. So that's really the core of how Junuri Publishing started, because I was already working as a book coach, where I was really coaching people through telling their story. You're organizing, helping them organize their thoughts. You're taking their manuscript, looking at it from their lens, and also looking at it from the reader's lens, right? What story am I trying to tell? And what story am I getting from reading this book? So that was the core of the publishing company. Nevertheless, the publishing company is the one that gets them on the shelves. So when you see them on Amazon, when you see them just published for public consumption, they're the ones that ensure that your story is out there for the general public to access. So, yeah.
Powerful. And almost finally, if I were to have a conversation with a younger Juliet, and even your dad or parents, for example, I have brown children, and you've confirmed for me that they don't just have to do one thing and do it well.
No.
They can dream big dreams. Could you share, unpack for parents, unpack for the young ones listening, the hows and the whys and how they could do all of these things? I'm amazed at how much you've accomplished in such a short time.
Right.
Unpack for us the possibilities.
I mean, anything's possible if you're being honest. I mean, if you want to do nothing, that's also possible. I won't necessarily say how, because I think everyone's journey is different, right? And I'm not a parent, so I could talk a big game about how you can raise your kids, but I haven't raised kids yet. And when I work with kids, sometimes that's my birth control. So I will not be the one to say this. These are the steps. What I will say is life is not a linear journey. Yes, you know, based on the culture we grow up in and our experiences, there sometimes is a trajectory that we prefer to follow, right? Even when we're following that trajectory, it is not a linear journey for everyone. There's not a one size fits all, right? And I also speak about that in the book. You have to kind of trust your process. And I think that's the beauty of where purpose comes in. I think as human beings, we are so compelled to apply potential to people. And that to me is a damaging word because potential is man-made, right? How dare even me tell myself that I can be a supervisor, right? How dare someone tell you, hey, I don't know, you can just do class presentations when you are purposed to sit on a podcast and inspire. And the thing about purpose, it's more attached to some kind of an objective, right? If that is to help people, if that is to inspire, if that is to support people in achieving a better quality of life, whatever it is, you can do that in so many ways. You can do it as a parent. You can do it as a spouse. You can do it as a friend. You can do it as an employee in an organization. You could also do it, hey, as the garbage man, right? You can support people's better quality of life by making sure the streets are clean, right? Making sure that, you know, they're clear, they're clean. You're supporting less pollution, things like that. And I think because people are so focused on potential, we're so attached to titles and specific roles that we don't really focus on what we were called to do in those roles, right? Oh, I achieved nurse, I achieved doctor. But what are you called to do as a nurse and a doctor? What are you called to do as a parent? What are you called to do as a friend, right? Because that really speaks to how we can be stewards of ourselves and other people. And so I think that's really where all of the possibilities open up. For me, my purpose is to really empower people and create safe spaces by which they can be their best authentic selves, but to also live their lives with meaning and purpose and impact. And so, you know, as a kid, I said, hey, I want to be a teacher. And then I threw it away. I threw the dream away. But I eventually became a teacher for a year in a classroom working in South Korea. And even when I don't work as a teacher in the classroom today, but I've been able to work with students, young and old, right? Privately, I am a children's choir director and I've been in the game for 15 years, directed children's choirs of upwards of 100 kids. Directed choirs with adults and young people and so on and so forth. And even in that sense, I am empowering people to be leaders, to serve their community, teaching them music, teaching them teamwork, teaching them listening, teaching them collaboration. There's so much that goes into it. And so for me, when I'm able to focus on my objective, what was I purposed on this earth to do and what meaning am I bringing to this earth? I can do it as whatever I want. And so, yes, you know, hey, I might be a business owner today and tomorrow I'm not the business owner, right? And it might hurt a little bit, but that's just indicative of another season where I can fulfill my purpose in a different way. And so that's what I would encourage people to do. Focus on the purpose because you can do it in so many ways.
Powerful, powerful. Now, Juliet, listeners want to know how to get Sharing My Lens, the college experience. They're yes. looking at your eyewear. They want to order a few pairs. You do speaking engagements.
Yes.
There's a number of, you're multifaceted. And I'd like to give you the opportunity to share ways people can connect and ways people can connect with what you have to offer as well.
Right. So on Instagram and on Facebook, as well as my website, it's Juliet Nuri Nelson, JuliettNurineLson. My website is JuliettNuriNelson.com. That is where you can find the links to Junuri, to Junuri Publishing, to Nuri Lens, and Voisin. You can also access Sharing My Lens, The College Experience. It is available on Amazon and I believe other distribution channels as well. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can connect with me on Instagram as well as Facebook. But yeah.
Really, really inspired by what you shared, Dr. Julia Nelson, entrepreneur, educator.
Thank you for having me.
Blessed us today, and we're so happy to have you. And please follow her journey. I'll put it in the links, ways to connect with her. She told us, but I'll put it in there so you can just click on it and be able to access all she has to offer. Julia, thank you so much for being
a guest. Thank you for having me.
Most welcome. Most welcome.